Peter Bowen.
Peter, hi. Jason Lexell. How are you?
Jason, good, thank you kindly. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing just wonderful. I'm doing just wonderful. I want to thank you for joining us today. This is Jason Lexell with Digital Harvest Research, and today we're with Peter Bowen from No More 24/7. And that's nomore247.com, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to give a little background and an intro here. You and I came in contact through one of our websites, icecreamprofits.com, and you have a very interesting, shared with us a very interesting system you're putting together to systemize an ice cream shop that you've actually detailed a bit in the blog on your website, which I found to be very interesting. And so I thought it would be great for us to do a call and talk a little bit about how you came in to this process and passion for systemizing businesses and the benefits of doing so.
Yeah, I certainly enjoyed reading up on the ice cream shop. It's an interesting project, but let me tell you about how it all started.
Okay.
I'm an engineer by profession, civil engineer. For some reason, I ended up studying that and actually working in that industry for a while, but I've always been an entrepreneur at heart. Now, unfortunately, with so many of us entrepreneurs, we get pretty good at making money, kind of hustling, doing things for ourselves, but it's really hard to go from being a one-man business to being a real business with employees that are actually adding value to your life and to be able to make money without working yourself half to death. I don't know if you've ever been in that position.
Yeah, I can relate to that personally. And in fact, I've seen a number of other business owners and heard from a number of other business owners that have complained about precisely what you said. They have opportunities to make money. It just requires more work, stress, and aggravation.
Well, that's exactly what happened with me. I ended up with four very different businesses, including one which was a retail plant nursery, you know, a garden center where you go and buy plants and compost and all of those good things to make your garden look pretty.
Sure.
I actually bought that business specifically to own the land that it stood on. I knew nothing about the business. And I hired two fairly experienced and kind of expensive managers to run this business for me with the intention that these guys run the business and that the business would pay for the land. After about 3 months, I realized that in spite of the experience at management that these guys had, they were losing me money, and they were actually wrecking the business. They'd never had the ownership of a whole business. They'd been managers underneath a business owner. Now, I knew nothing about the nursery business. As I mentioned, I just wanted to own the business so that I could get the nice big piece of land that it stood on.
Okay.
It was a choice of either fire them or continue throwing money at the business. So I fired them, and I put my secretary into the nursery office. And between her and I, we realized that we had to run this place, as well as keeping the other three businesses on the go at the same time. And because we knew nothing about the business, I think we were actually at an advantage. And I know this sounds odd, because so often the things that we do to make money are the things that we are experts at. You know, you get a guy who's a really good plumber and he sets up a plumbing business, or an architect and he goes out and practices architecture on his own, or whatever it is. But being totally ignorant about the nursery, we ended up asking tons and tons of questions. And every time we asked a question, we documented the answers. And every time we made stupid mistakes, or the staff made stupid mistakes, we kind of wrote up some rules, and we ended up with a book called The Kingfisher Creek Way. The nursery was called Kingfisher Creek. The Kingfisher Creek Way, How We Do Things Here.
Okay.
Kind of an ostentatious title for what was about 100 pages of checklists that we'd drawn up on a word processor. But these checklists covered every single aspect of running that business. What to do when somebody came in, when a customer came in, what to do to order new plants, how to water the plants. It was even in such detail so that the old maintenance guy knew how often he had to oil the hinges on the gate.
No kidding.
It did seem a bit crazy, but it was a big piece of land with a whole bunch of buildings and things, and I wasn't going to be able to spend months and months and months learning how to do all of that stuff myself, and then doing it because it was a kind of a small business and I had other businesses to run. So we were always trying to build a set of instructions into the business so that it could be run by somebody else rather than by the owner, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. What is surprising me here is that I actually thought that you may have started with a passion for systemizing, and it turns out that it almost happened by accident because it was an unfamiliar business, and you almost had to.
That's exactly right. I realize in retrospect that I've always been more interested in building a business than actually working in it day after day after day. However, I've still had a couple of those businesses where I've been the guy who's up early in the morning and getting home at some stupid hour in the middle of the night, and none of that really made me happy. I made quite a bit of money, and that was all good, but I ended up working harder and harder to earn that money and having less and less time to enjoy it. I think that's a position so many of us find ourselves in too often.
And it becomes a sacrifice, a huge sacrifice, in that you have the money, but you're not necessarily happier. You don't have the time to enjoy it, or the mental. It almost seems like a mirage, you know, something you're running towards, but you just keep on making more work for yourself as you grow the business in hopes that it will earn more money. But I think it turns out to be one of the biggest complaints that many small business owners have, is that their businesses run them.
Sometimes I would look at, like, the guy who was driving the dustbin truck picking up the bags, and I think, well, you know, he gets to work in the morning and he drives his truck for 8 hours and he goes home and he's got enough money, and, you know, it's kind of a, I was actually jealous of guys in these fairly low-skilled operations just because of the stability that they had and the lack of stress that they had in their life. I mean, that guy was never stressed driving his dustbin truck.
Right.
Anyway, we ended up building this nursery business, and it took about 4 or 5 months to do. And we eventually hired a young girl on her second job. She'd been a waitress at a coffee shop, and she did a good job. And I said, hey, would you like to come and work for me? And she became the manageress of the nursery business. She had 7 staff. She had a fairly decent-sized little business running over there. And I realized that not because she was particularly wonderful, and she was a good girl, but not because of that, but because every single thing in the business had been documented, that she could run it without having to be an expert at either a nursery or an expert at a business. And that just made such an impact on my whole thinking about how we run businesses and how we build businesses.
Do you remember when you started to notice it? Because it sounds like this was a bit of a gradual process that started to happen, and then all of a sudden you must have just noticed something different.
Well, I do. Jason, at the time I was running a sound hire and production company. We were doing lighting and staging and the sound systems for concerts, and that's a very stressful and it's a well-paying business.
Sure.
But it requires some terrible hours. And I hadn't had a break for about 8 months. I'd been working 6.5, 7 days a week. And one day I was in the nursery, and for a change, it was a Saturday morning, and it was just perfect. And I lived in Durban in South Africa. It's on the East Coast, probably a similar climate to Florida in the United States.
Okay.
And I love surfing. I had this beautiful 9-foot customized longboard, which was gathering dust. I took 3 hours off for the first time in 8 months, and I went to surf. I have to tell you, I took my mobile phone onto the beach, and I had my wife sit on the beach, and if it rang, she had a wave at me so I could come in and, you know, just in case something was going wrong that I needed to solve.
Sure.
Well, as it turns out, I got back to the nursery, and I walked in there, and customers were coming in, and customers were going out with stuff, and I said, anything exciting? I said, no, nothing. I was actually redundant in my own business. I remember that particular Saturday morning very clearly.
Wow. Wow. That sounds like a dream. And it's a lot of things. I think it's something that a lot of people don't even know can exist.
Well, about a month later, I took off a Saturday and a Sunday, and I went camping. And about 2 months after that, I took a three-week holiday for the first time in 5 years. It was, you know, for an entrepreneur who's measured his success by the hours and measured his commitment by long days, it was really, really interesting to be able to go away and have money being made by staff and have a business running where you don't come back to chaos.
It's funny how that is almost the norm for most.
Most of us expect that that's just part of what we take on when we do decide to run our own businesses.
Do you find that the staff being left with for those periods of time, some responsibility and of course, no supervision for periods of time, helped them to feel a little bit of an ownership for the business or to feel a little bit less managed and more responsible? Or what was the effect of that?
That's actually quite an interesting point because, in fact, we do build in supervision into the systems that we use now. At the time, we built in really firstly self-inspection and self-supervision. To give you an example, each member of staff would have a clipboard with a checklist on it, and the checklist would be like stuff that had to be done every day and then every week and so on. And so they would go off and do what they had to do and actually tick it off on the checklist tomorrow, you know, just to remind themselves. We did involve the staff quite heavily. You know, not being an expert at the business, I really depended on the staff to help develop the systems.
Okay.
And I think because they had that input, they felt like it was part of what they were doing. But certainly the performance from the staff increased, the productivity, the sales per person, the sales per dollar spent on salaries all went up as a result, or not perhaps not necessarily as a direct result, but certainly they did all go up from the time before we had the systems in place.
So it definitely had systemizing and adding that process did help probably for people to remember different stages of even the customer interaction and things that would happen once in a while, like greeting customers. When it becomes systemized and more automatic, just has more consistency.
Yeah, that is right. And we involve them in experimenting with different things. You know, you don't actually know what works best until for your particular business until you've tried a few things and measured them. And we involve the staff in doing all of that. They also, I think, we treat too often our workers like children when they're at the office. I mean, they're adults. They're making decisions about home loans and buying cars and raising kids themselves. But at the office, we take away all of that. And then as the boss, we're kind of the parent. Maybe that's a bit of an extreme example, but I certainly have seen that kind of thing happening.
Okay. Now, when you say you involved the staff in the decision-making around developing these processes, how would that occur? Would you have weekly meetings or sort of impromptu meetings where people would gather together and you would talk about different areas of the business that just need to be tightened up and documented as a system?
Yeah. I'm not really a formal meetings guy, and I think a lot of small business owners get into their own business because they don't like the formality of large companies. And so most of the work was done one-on-one, informally. So what would happen is, let me just give you an example, one of the sales staff, I would go down and I'd say, well, these are the steps that I think should be happening. Does this make sense to you? And then we'd work through them together. I ended up with getting my hands dirty on more than one occasion, actually doing the exact steps in the various processes that form the systems, just to make sure that they were reasonable rather than just something that I'd conceived while sitting in my office watching everyone work.
Okay.
And some of the things that I thought were reasonable to do and sensible to do turned out wrong, and the people who were actually doing the jobs often had much better ideas.
No kidding. Okay. So you would take an area that you felt you needed to have more I guess what's the word I'm looking for, managed or develop a process so that it runs more smoothly and consistently for either the customer or for just the internal operations. And how would this start? You'd write at the top of the page, for example, a process for watering plants or process for customer interaction. Or let's take an example and kind of work through it just a little bit.
Well, okay, let's take an example of that's pretty common to most businesses. That's ordering stock or keeping your inventory up to date if you're reselling something. So in this case, you would be buying something. For the nursery, it was buying plants and compost and pebbles and those kind of things. But the process is exactly the same no matter what you're selling. So what we would typically do is grab a sheet of paper and map the process out. Step one, we decide we need something. Step two, contact the supplier to make sure that we get that. Step three, the supplier delivers it. Step four, we check that what we've got delivered actually is what we ordered. Step five, it gets merchandise packed on a shelf or packed in a storeroom or whatever the case may be. Now, that's five very simple steps in an operation like that. I'm just using that example off the top of my head.
Okay.
But that forms the backbone of the system. And then it gets fleshed out. And this is where you can really start to add value. Let's just take something like the first step over there was decide what we needed. Now, if you've got a whole bunch of money tied up in your inventory, you're having to insure it. That money is not available to do anything else. But it becomes a whole lot better if you know and if you have a system that helps you understand what you're selling when you're selling it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So then what you can do is you can, before that step of deciding what to buy, is that you can have a computer program connected up to your cash register, point of sale program, that tells you exactly what's selling. And you can get a much better idea of what's selling fast, and you can compare that with your inventory management, and it's nice to put them all in the same package, and they're packages that are cheaply available to do that. And you can see what you should be ordering so that you suddenly go from guesswork to a very documented and best practice way of doing something where you know exactly what you should have because you're only buying what's selling.
Absolutely. And you're not running out of inventory and having shortages of top-selling items, which can cause problems with customers and lose revenue.
That's exactly right. And because it's not hard to do something like this, but it's once you've set it up, it happens pretty much automatically without any additional effort over and above the effort that you would normally put in to ring up a sale or whatever the case may be. The work of running the system is quite small, and you start to get benefits in that there's no panic because you're running out of something. You end up buying things at a higher price because you can get them delivered the very next day or whatever the case may be.
Sure.
So that's kind of the outline of how you do it. You map the basic process, the process that comes off the top of your head, and then you start to look for ways of adding value to that process and ways of ensuring that the things that you want to have happen actually do happen in that, and then you convert them into either a checklist or a set of standard instructions, or use a standard document to collect information or to encourage action or whatever it is.
These standard documents, I mean, would you print them out or keep several copies of something like an ordering stock form that people could then go through and fill out where they have to initial the different steps or check through the different steps? Or would it be more of just a list of the steps that they mentally then have to go through? But I guess I'm looking at the closing the loop portion and making sure that these steps are getting done and followed.
No,
doing that without
stuff.
Being too much of a, without, I guess, being too stringent. I'm not sure if that's possible.
Well, if we take away the need to remember a whole bunch of things, it's not offensive to somebody to have a to have a little checklist. I mean, every time you fill in a tax return or something like that, you've got a checklist of certain things that you have to provide with it.
Mm-hmm.
We actually detailed either on checklists or on something like you spoke about an order form. A computerized accounting package often comes with the ability to generate a purchase order. So instead of having a reminder to put the delivery address on or the delivery time, you have a little box on the accounting package which encourages you to do that. It reminds you if it's not done.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay.
But certainly it's important to document as much of the process as you can, and after a while your regular employees won't need that information in front of them. But when you get a new guy in there, he's going to be wanting to look at that process, those documented steps, for the first couple of times at least. And when there are processes that happen less frequently, it's nice to have the instructions. It saves having to remember things.
Even for some things in our business that we do monthly, you'd be amazed at how much you forget when you go back. And there's a couple of things that I didn't even realize it, but now hearing you talk, I realize that I've written down for myself some checklists on some processes, and I could certainly have a lot more in our business. Things would definitely run smoother. But that was very helpful, and you'd be surprised how long it took me to figure out that why don't I just document this once. Just take the time this time to document it once, and it's tremendously liberating because you're not relying on your memory anymore to go through all the steps. And when I finally found somebody to do that job, I was able to show them my list, and they could pretty much understand it in a fraction of the time. And now they had something to follow, and if they couldn't do it, or I could come back to it, and I knew the steps. So I might be jumping ahead, but doesn't it also help because it allows you to transition people in and out of a system?
Yeah, people get bored doing exactly the same thing. And if you're going to have employees that are with you for a number of years, it helps to cross-train and to have them to be able to do different kinds of jobs. Some people aren't going to be there every day.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great thing. I mean, you've seen the benefit in your own business.
Absolutely.
Just doing it for yourself. Fast to train. It's also important that you have an objective standard to judge somebody's performance by. I think most of us small business owners aren't trained as managers. And I know for myself, I'm actually a useless boss. I suppose I shouldn't be saying that where it's being recorded and will be held against me.
I think I know where you're going. I may have felt this way before myself, but go ahead.
And sometimes a worker will actually be doing a fairly okay job, or they'll have messed up something. But most of the time, and I'm only realizing this after a couple of years in business, but most of the time I'm the guy at fault because I haven't explained to them properly what they should have been doing. And
right.
I'm moaning at them or firing them or whatever the case may be, because they're reflecting a fault that I've caused in that the instructions weren't well documented. But
well,
on the other hand, if you've got someone useless and they're not following those instructions, you've got all the ammunition you need to fire them.
There's that. But I think also going back to what you said, one of the reasons why this was so... why this got developed, again, you got into a business where you didn't exactly know, and it had to be documented. And when this then becomes documented, you're able to convey it better to employees, what your expectations are. Because once you know a business, I think the time to do what you're talking about is in the business, or you know, really any time, but in the early stages, you're going to start to notice the things that, after 2 years, you may do subconsciously without giving any thought, and those are the things you forget to explain to somebody.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It has become part of your hardwired coding, and to you it doesn't take thought, but when you document everything, you'll realize that there's plenty of things that you've learned and absorbed over time. And I think that that's definitely true, and just another advantage to having a system. A couple of things we didn't bring up early in this call, and I wanted to, were the advantages of systemizing your business. We've been talking about some of the how and the advantages to your employees in growing, but there's also some other advantages, aren't there?
Yeah, definitely. A systemized business allows the owner a whole lot more freedom. You're free to actually work on the business. I know that's a catchphrase that's often repeated but not always understood, but you're free to take a kind of a bird's eye view of the business rather than having to spend every hour of every day and most nights actually doing the work, being at the coalface. If you do that, the chances of your business succeeding are far, far better. And you're also able to grow faster, and you're able to do it at a sustainable work rate. You know, when you're young and in your 20s and your 30s, and you're perhaps single or whatever it is, you can really burn 18, 20 hours a day for months and months at a time. But that's not sustainable. So you either burn out and hate it, or you just become fairly useless. Your creativity disappears because you're so involved right inside. What's the saying? You can't see the wood for the trees.
Sure, sure.
Another thing is that small businesses are inherently risky. If you are the business, you're the guy that's answering all the phones, you're the guy that's doing all the productive work, you're the one phoning the clients for new business. If you are the business and you get sick, your business would survive a week's absence. It might take you a couple of weeks or months to recover from that. But most of us here, if we took a month or 2 months off with no money coming in, nobody chasing outstanding debt, nobody finishing up the work that we started before whatever it has happened to us, that business fails, and it can take us with it very, very easily. I've seen it time and again, and it breaks my heart to see guys who've given years and years and years, and then they have a heart attack, or they're in a car accident, or a stroke, or any one of these stupid things that happen so quickly and unexpectedly, and then that business just becomes an anchor and drags them down.
Sure. And they had that special something, and the entire business ran up in their head. They had it all figured out, but as soon as they were pulled from the equation, it couldn't run.
That's exactly what happens. And even if the business only ran at 80% of what it did when the owner was there, it would probably be enough to at least survive and be salvageable.
Or sellable. And I think that's another point I wanted you to bring up. Eventually, there's an exit strategy to a lot of businesses, and some hand down to family members, of which systemizing is helpful there too. But what kind of impact does systemizing your business have on your ability to one day sell your business to an investor or somebody who wants to, maybe even a competitor or a larger chain that wants to acquire you?
Well, there are basically three kinds of people who buy businesses. As you mentioned, there's an investor, or your competition, or there's sometimes a guy who wants to work in the business, often somebody who will have taken an early retirement or received some money from somewhere will want to buy himself a job. Now, a systemized business is actually attractive to all three of those people. An investor wants a good return on his investment. Your business is just a vehicle for him to make more money. And a systemized business is more attractive because it doesn't require and it doesn't tie his time up. A competitor is not buying your equipment or your premises or anything like that. He's buying your customer base. Now, if that customer base only knows you as the face and the eyes and the ears and the hands of the business, the chances of most of those customers migrating to the competition who just bought your business is a lot smaller. So obviously they're going to be less excited and less prepared to pay a good price for that. And a guy who wants to work in the business, he's concerned about how long will it take him to know the business. What kind, does he have to be a specialist at the work of the business in order to be able to make a living. What's going to happen if one of the staff members who's been there for a long time decides to leave after a month or two? Now all of these things are in some way made better by having a good systemized business. And so they attract a lot more attention and they attract a much better price.
Excellent. Excellent. Oh, those are really good points. And I think that that's something that we do see a lot of when people decide they want to retire from the business or they want to move. A spouse gets another job offer or they decide they want to move to a warmer climate and it comes time to sell, whether it be a nail salon or an ice cream shop, and the potential buyers look at it and say, well, geez, once you leave, there's really not much of a business left here.
That's right. There's some secondhand assets and maybe a little bit of goodwill. When I actually sold the nursery business that I was talking about earlier, and I had 41 people competing to buy it.
Wow.
I sent out an email to my entire client base and to a few business brokers as well. I had 41 people. I don't know how many times I told them the same story and showed them the figures and things like that. But eventually I sold it for more than double what I thought was what I thought initially was a good price. It was always my plan to keep the land, and I've still got the land, and there's a guy who's running the business, Stephen. He's got a day job as a mortgage broker or something like that, and he runs the business purely as an investment, and he's still making money out of it and paying me rent every month.
No kidding. Okay, so he actually has a full-time job and has decided to run it on the side as you had been doing. And things are still going well. Well, that's excellent. And you've got them as a tenant.
Yeah, he's a good tenant. The business is doing what it was supposed to do. But if I had sold it to as it was when I first took it over, I would have only been able to sell it to another nurseryman.
And sure.
There's probably not a huge number of people who want to run nurseries. The same as there's not a huge number of people who want to run an ice cream shop or a pizza shop or whatever it is. The pool becomes much lower if it requires specialist skills rather than some general management.
Okay. And you have recently started applying your principles. You've recently opened up a soft serve shop.
Well, we actually bought an existing soft serve shop that was owner-managed, owner-run.
Okay.
It was started about 7 years ago by, a 20-year-old girl at the time. And she and her mom have been behind the counter for 7 years, and they're tired of it. We recently bought that business over purely as a system, a business to be systemized. I don't even like ice cream that much.
How can you not like ice cream? That's right. You don't have to answer that. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we're in the process now of systemizing it. We've taken over trading for just a few days, and in fact today was quite an interesting day. I received 5 phone calls. I'm acting as the owner in that the owner of the majority of the business has not even identified himself to the staff. The plan here is that the owners are never going to work in the business, and that this is going to be the start of either a franchise operation or a chain, an owned chain of similar businesses, because they can be very profitable little businesses. They're perfect for systemizing, and they're quite simple to run. There's not a whole lot of rocket science in an ice cream shop.
Well, can I ask you then, because I think there's a lot of people that start off in this business and it eats them alive, and maybe the chaos comes from poor planning, and a portion of it comes from not having systems in place. But I think everybody's dream ultimately is one of two things: to grow the business into a chain, or to be able to have the business operating with minimal involvement, minimal direct involvement from you as an owner. And here, rather than building to that, you're actually starting at that platform. And what are some of the things that you've noticed?
Well, any business needs to be able to have the employees perform perform at a higher level than they would naturally be at. Now, the kind of people that are attracted to this, or that work at this particular ice cream parlor, and I imagine are pretty similar to most, are young people, teenagers during the school holidays, and then and students. So they're never going to be particularly responsible, and there's no way we could build a business around one or two bright and outstanding individuals. That just wouldn't be sustainable, because 2 or 3 years' time, those individuals have moved on to something else. So we have to build a business that can run fine and profitably with fairly low-level staff. Now, I'm not being rude when I say that, but people at the beginning of their career rather than very experienced.
Okay.
So in order to do that, we've started documenting everything that needs to happen. Let's just take something like cleaning. You can get shut down pretty quickly by the health authorities if your ice cream shop is a bed of bacteria. So cleaning procedures need to be fairly strict, and they need to be set out in advance. Now, the previous owners knew everything about cleaning all the ice cream machines and things like that. I don't know if you get what are called, I'm lost for words over here, a slush puppy or a slushy machine.
Sure, okay. Yeah, we have those.
Well, today I was baptized by a slushy machine. I was in the ice cream shop, and I was busy documenting with my video camera the process for stripping it and doing the weekly cleaning and maintenance of the machine. And the reason I'm making a video of it is that I don't really feel like explaining how to do it time and again every time we change staff. So what we do is we put it on video, and the staff can watch it quite easily.
Anyway, fabulous idea. That's a nice little tip.
And it works well. You can make a video. It doesn't have to be a professional video with your cheap Sony Handycam or something like that.
Sure.
Anyway, somebody pulled the wrong piece of thing out, and I got all my legs washed with this ice-cold, slushy liquid. But the point is there are three or four machines in this particular shop. So each machine gets a daily cleaning schedule, which says what needs to be cleaned, what you use to clean it, and how will you know if it's cleaned properly. Those are the three things. What needs to be cleaned, what you use to clean it, and how you know if it's done properly. Then the operations manager, his checklist includes a note to inspect the particular machine to make sure that it has been cleaned in compliance with the standards. Each machine also, and when I say machine, it's actually each part of the shop that includes the windows, the shelving, the floors, and everything, gets a weekly cleaning schedule, which is obviously a more comprehensive cleaning routine. And so these things are documented in a set of standard forms and things called a cleaning matrix.
Okay.
Am I making sense here when I explain it like that?
So you've got a video recording that you use essentially to train people in the beginning stages.
Yes.
And after that, you have this process as a checklist documented, which once that's completed, somebody knows they've completed the process, it is then inspected by a supervisor, somebody on staff assigned to a regular inspection process. And again, are you keeping track of these things on sheets? Do you use dry erase, or is it a new sheet every day and then dated and filed, or how does that work?
Well, what we have done is we've built a software program. We don't have a fancy name for it yet, so it gets known by the long name of the Systems Building Tool.
Okay.
And this is available on the web. You just you log in, and then you can start building these kind of systems. And you can add items that need to be done every day and assign them to particular positions. So what we'll do is we'll assign the position of clean the soft outside of the soft serve machine to the position of cashier or store operator. And then we'll create another task that says inspect the soft serve machine and schedule that. Instead of scheduling that for every day, we'll schedule that for once a week, and we'll assign that to the position of operations manager. And then once we've finished all the tasks and the assignments and setting the recurrence of these tasks, we use the software to generate a work list. And so what that work list says is, every day you've got this, 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 and this item to do. Every week or every Monday you've got this item. Every second Monday, every month, and it goes through the whole calendar and lists what needs to be done, so that you can produce an overall view for each position.
Okay.
And then nobody's confused about what needs to be done and when it needs to be done.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that's perfectly clear. And this software tool, for those people listening, we're going to create a link for it where you do have a special offer for them, and that will be on digitalharvestresearch.com, and we have a resources tab. And if you click on that resources tab, you can learn a little bit more about the software as well as get a special offer if that's something that our listeners are interested in. And we'll also give that out at the end of the call.
Yeah, Jason, it normally sells for $297. And so what we're going to do is, for the listeners, is we're going to knock off $150 off their price. So basically give it out for about 50% of the normal selling price.
Wow, fantastic. And with this tool, they'll be able to create systems within their business as well as manage those systems? Am I correct in assuming that this collection of tasks and processes are then, they're able to check them off on the computer, or does it simply produce printouts that can be used in the business?
Yeah, you could do it on a computer, but we've actually opted to go for a printout as a better means of doing that. You don't always have a computer readily accessible to the frontline staff.
Okay, that makes sense.
Sometimes it's an unnecessary expense, and sometimes it's just the space and the, I don't want guys with a whole bunch of ice cream on their fingers touching my computer.
Sure. Well, that makes sense. So then they've got it on a clipboard, and it can be just under the counter, and they can, it's very unobtrusive.
That's right. And that same clipboard contains the information for the steps and the tasks for cleaning. It contains the steps and tasks for stocking up the fridges, for opening, the procedures that you have to do when you open up in the morning, the procedures that you have to do at the change of shift. All of that information is built in to a simple form that's on the easily read and easily understood. And what they do is they tick off the things as they go, and at the end of the shift there's a place for the operations manager to sign off on that. So they get a chance to hold themselves accountable for the work that they need to do as part of a team. And the operations manager is then inspecting that work is actually being done.
Excellent. And it closes the loop, systemizes the process. Now, is this, you're using this currently within the soft serve business that you acquired with your plans of franchising or developing a chain. Can this software can be used for other small businesses like a smoothie shop or anything that has routines that would benefit from documentation and creating systems. Am I correct?
That's right. You see, no matter what business you're in, it's all pretty much the same under the hood. Most of the work that we do is very, very similar no matter what product we produce. We spoke about the nursery earlier on and about the need to decide what stock you're going to order, to order it, to make sure that what you've ordered is actually right, and then to do something with that. Now, that's exactly the same with a soft serve shop. It's exactly the same with a pizza shop, or pretty much any business that has the need to bring stock in and resell it. The actual stock varies. The actual cleaning process varies, but the need to have a documented process is exactly the same. The need to schedule shifts is the same if you're running a petrol station or if you're running any other kind of business where you have workers working more than just a normal 9-to-5. So the processes and the systems that we develop are pretty much the same in any business. And what we've done is we've developed 92 standard processes. We've said there's no reason for a business owner to have to reinvent the wheel, have to go and figure out for himself the best way to hire somebody or the best way to manage inventory. We've said, let's document those, let's get specialists in all of those various areas to develop systems for us, and we'll just cut and paste those, make a couple of changes here and there if necessary, and have those available to businesses so that the people don't have to spend the time building something that, firstly, they're not experts at. Because how many of us are really experts at human resources or finance and administration, those kind of things? I'm certainly not.
Right, right. And as small business owners and gung-ho entrepreneurs, we usually tackle it the best we can. but it's not always the best.
Yeah, and it's so wasteful of time. Instead of spending the hours that we have doing something to grow the business, we spend it working out the best way to ensure that our staff account for their uniforms. What a crazy way to spend our lives.
When you put it like that, and so these processes, these forms that people can apply to their different businesses can be customized. Is that bring them into Word, or can they customize them within the program and save them? How does that part work?
Well, what we've done is we've built them in Word and Excel so that they are easily customized and easily changed.
Fabulous.
You might want to put on company information. You might want to take stuff. Excuse me, hold on a second. So we built them. We built them out of tools that are readily available to use. So the software enables us to schedule activities and then move those activities to various positions and produce work lists. The standard documents are available for download on the website, and you download them and you make whatever changes you need, and then you can print them up as you need to use them.
Excellent. We distribute a lot of our product in Excel and Word, and I think most people are familiar working within those environments, and that's a very helpful thing. I want to jump back a little bit to something that I read on your website that was a huge eye-opener, and I've never heard it put like this, but you actually broke down and gave 3 proven tips for increasing the average sale value that is a step of process, but can easily be done, doesn't add a lot of time, and I'm putting you on the spot here that you remember what those were on your blog, but do you want to talk a little bit about those?
Yes, there are 3 steps. The first one is starting big, the second one is upselling, and the third one is suggesting. Now, the fast food franchises have these things down to an art, and we can learn a lot from them. But so many small business owners, especially within the fast food or the convenience food section, tend to leave a lot of money on the table. And the extra sales that you can get, those extra 10-15%, most of that goes straight down to the bottom line, because the fixed costs, the rent, the staff, the water and electricity, and those kind of costs are there anyway. And there's often a fairly high markup on food items and food products. So if you're able to make a little more out of this, that's just good money at the end of the day. Well, let's just talk about starting big to start out with. If you've got a couple of variants in size, and somebody comes up and says, I would like, and let's just use the ice cream as an example, I'd like an ice cream. If you say to them, would you like a small one? Oh, they're probably going to say yes. But if you grab the biggest one and say, this one for you, you sort of automatically start out with the most profitable item, with the item that brings you the most money in.
Right.
They can then say no if they don't want it. Sorry.
I didn't realize it at the time, but I've had that done when I was buying coffee, and I didn't specify, and instantly they got the largest coffee, and I think that might be some one of the reasons why they've changed the names of small, medium, and large to all sorts of different things. So it's a little harder to know when you're buying the extra, extra large.
you end up with a liter of hot coffee.
Exactly, exactly. I think, so it's a defaulting to a larger size when it is not otherwise specified.
It must be done sensitively. If you've got a mother with small kids, don't sell the kids something that they're never going to finish. That just annoys people. But within a sensitive way, default to the largest size.
Okay.
The second way to do it is to upsell. You make a lot of money in an ice cream shop on most businesses, on those little extras. There's high margin on those sort of things. Things like chocolate coating and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
And in fact, in almost any business, the little bits that you tack on is where you can make a lot of money. And what you need to do is you need to keep offering those until the person says no. So if you've got three or four extras that can be added onto any particular product, you've got to train your staff to offer them. They're asked for an ice cream. Would you like a flake to go with that? How about some topping? How about some of those little colored jobs on the top? And so each time it's maybe only 15% or 10% of the total purchase price, but by the time you've finished it, you've sold 1.5 times what you would have otherwise sold. And because the numbers are fairly small, people buy them quite easily.
Absolutely.
But it does require training.
Then the suggestive selling is critical in that upselling process, and it can, again, it can be done without hounding the customer, but simply, asking, if they'd like this or if they'd like that as part of the process. Did you want whipped cream on that? Did you want? Would you like nuts on that? And they don't realize all the time that it's they're additional items. But and they are very small in cost, but they do help to add to the margin.
Well, the way I train my staff is, imagine having somebody over to your house for coffee. You wouldn't give them a cup of black coffee. You would ask them, would you like some sugar? Would you like milk? And you keep on in that kind of tone. It's perhaps a little simplistic, but it does seem to work quite well.
Okay.
And then the final way is to suggest to the people in the party who aren't buying. Now, if you've got a fairly narrow product range, you might have one or two people in a family that come in there who aren't interested in your primary product range. And what you then do is offer them something. People, especially when it's a kind of a happy food place, like an ice cream parlor or a smoothie bar or something like that, people tend to feel a little left out if everybody else is getting something and they're not getting an ice cream. Perhaps they don't like the stuff, but if you offer them a Coke, all they can do is say no, but if they say yes, it's another sale. And each of those things repeated 3,000, 4,000 times a month adds up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes it's just the mere mention of something to somebody who it was the furthest thing from their head. As soon as they hear it offered, I start to think, yeah, you know, I would. Thanks for bringing that to my attention. And like you said, they're happy food places. People come in. They generally are there to have a good time. And so it's a little bit unnatural for somebody to sit there without anything. Even if your primary product isn't of interest to them. So that stuck out, and I actually took notes on that part of your process. I think it's great. There was a second portion that I thought was really outstanding because to some people probably listening on this call, they might be saying, oh, great. Well, how are you going to get people, especially part-time workers that may not be 100% thrilled every day to show up for work, how are you going to get them to do this process unsupervised? And you went ahead and answered that in another one of your posts where you actually talk about rewarding your employees for upselling. And again, for so many people that have problems with motivation and for incentivizing employees and complain about how people don't have that, they can't find people to be excited about their work, I thought, wow, that's a great thing. And the next question was, well, how the heck do you do that?
Well, the way I figure it is, if this employee just sits there and does the barest minimum, we're going to make a certain amount. If they put a bit of energy into it and do things like starting big, upselling and suggesting, we're going to make a whole lot more money. And what we've done is we've said we'll split the money with you 50-50. We'll split the profit from everything you upsell 50-50.
Wow.
It sounds generous. The actual monetary values are fairly small in terms of the overall shop's profitability. But for an employee on minimum wage, that can add up to quite a nice little bonus at the end of each month.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And the concept of sharing 50-50 seems to work. It's better than 10% or 15%. 50-50 seems to, it just seems to build a sense of ownership.
Okay. Tracking that, is that something that's difficult to do?
It's not particularly difficult to do because you can set up your points of sale system to record separately the upsell and the extra sell items.
Okay.
And now, obviously, if you were going to be fairly picky about it and say, well, this guy would have chosen to have that extra item anyway, you're going to find yourself in trouble. But we're looking at splitting hairs over here. So we just, to make it easier, we say whatever is on these particular product codes, which are the upsell items, any of that, the profit, and we tell the employees, and they know what the things cost because they're the ones accepting the delivery at the shop. We don't have the owners counting every box of stuff that comes in.
Okay.
And they see that they get a share of the profits. It works well.
Excellent. I think that's a fantastic idea and something that and a tool that businesses can use to get, like you had said, the employees involved in feeling a sense of ownership and noticing that these add up. They're going to be there anyway, and it doesn't take a whole lot of extra effort. It also feels a lot like service to the customer.
Yes.
When somebody's attending to them and asking them if they like this, if they like that, you feel attended to. You may be getting sold if you really think about it, but it does appear, for the most part, and feel an awful lot like service, and people like that. People, the person who doesn't really look at you at all or ask you anything and sort of takes your order and then grumbles away and goes off and makes it, that's a different experience. So it will keep them more engaged with the customer as well as they go through that process you outlined. And, wow, rewarding is great. What a concept.
And that money is bonus money. You wouldn't get it unless the employee was there. You can't sit there and do it all yourself.
Right.
So you might as well share it and keep the people happy.
That's a great piece of advice. Now, I think that you detailed some other things again that I learned and found tremendously helpful. I'd like to get a little bit more into them. You had 7 items for tracking the health of your business. Again, as people sort of evolve through their business from being an integral part that works in the business to being in a position of overseeing and managing the business and maybe managing multiple locations, you've distilled the business down to 7 items that help people to track the health of their overall business. Despite everything else that's going on, these things that you've identified are primary indicators and can show you where you're doing well or can show you areas of concern, and then, of course, you'll have to probe deeper. But I've written them down here in case you don't have them, but I'd like to take a little bit of time and review those.
Okay. Jason, I'm a little concerned because these 7 indicators are not exactly the same 7 indicators that every other business should track. There is no one set of health indicators or key performance indicators that fits every single business.
Okay.
Most of these 7 are common to all businesses, but there are probably things that are quite important for everybody to understand about their own businesses that are very specific to their businesses. But let's just take a look at these because these are common to most of them.
I've sent them to you, so you have a copy, right?
That's right. The first is the total number of transactions.
Okay.
You want to see what's happening, how many transactions you're actually doing. Then the time distribution of those transactions. That's quite useful for staff planning, as well as for doing sneaky things like getting your best-selling staff scheduled for the busiest times.
Ah,
you're
going to
have
smart.
Your top performers. Might as well have them there when the most people are there.
Sure.
But that's information that doesn't always get tracked, and it's pretty easy to track. What we use is a simple piece of paper, a paper-based form, and it's divided up into half-hour segments. And every time they complete a transaction, the cashier just makes a little tick on that. It takes probably a second or two to do. It's not distracting.
Okay.
And it's a very easy way to get an accurate picture. Often what happens, especially when we work in our businesses, is that we become so close to it that we tend to have a feeling about the way things are running rather than an actual quantified knowledge of it.
Absolutely.
Then the next thing that we track is the number of returning customers and the number of new customers. Obviously, if you have a whole bunch of returning customers, it means you're doing something right. The actual service, the experience that those customers are having is acceptable.
And how do you know the returning customers? Is there some easy way to do that?
There are a couple of ways of doing it. The way that we like to use is a loyalty card system.
Okay.
That gives you quite a bit of information. It depends on the value of the sale as to whether it's worthwhile implementing or not, and to answer the complexity of the loyalty card system. Some places will have an electronic card with a magnetic stripe similar to a credit card, but that's really for high-value purchases because that's quite an expensive system to set up.
Sure.
What we have is a simple piece of card, just a little bit bigger than a business card, and a small stamp, and it's divided up into 8 blocks. And every time they present that, it gets stamped, and after 8 stamps, they're entitled to a free ice cream.
Okay.
It encourages them to come back. It doesn't cost very much, and it gives us an idea. It just gives us a feel for how often people are coming back, just to get that valuable information to enable you to plan more than just the day-to-day running of the business.
Gotcha. Okay.
New customers we track primarily as a way of seeing how effective the advertising and marketing systems are.
And so new customers, that might be somebody returning with a coupon, or would that be something that you would use when tracking new customers?
Yeah, always some sort of response mechanism on an advert. Bring this in for something free. Bring this in for an upgrade. Bring this in, whatever it is. But always, we don't do any advertising without a response mechanism. That's not for small businesses. Brand building advertising is for banks and car makers.
Right.
So we track that by the number of people requesting the loyalty card for the first time. So what happens is that the staff have been trained to say, "Do you have our loyalty card?" If the answer is no, we hand them one and we get their details, and at the end of the shift we can see how many loyalty cards we've handed out. And while it's not a foolproof method, it gives us an idea of how many new customers we're asking that question to every day.
Okay.
Then the other indicators are the average transaction value. This is pretty important, and sometimes if you don't have this, you don't know how to spend your marketing budget. If your average transaction value is $100 and you're making $40 out of every $100 that they spend, you know that you can spend up to $40 to get a customer in the door. Kind of
right.
Simple mathematics.
Okay.
And so if your advertising costs you $40,000 and you're bringing in 1,000 customers off that, you've broken even.
Right.
But until you start to know these things, you can't see how beneficial or how to quantify the spend in your business. If you're having a promotion and your whatever it is you're promoting costs you more than you're making out of the average sale, you're losing in the short term. Now, it might be a long-term strategy to bring in more customers, but you do need to know in the short term the value of those customers.
The transaction value, is that something that you can get essentially from most point-of-sale systems?
Yeah, that's where you have to get it from. Otherwise, you end up taking too much effort to actually collect this information, and it becomes obtrusive. It becomes something to stumble over.
Okay.
So a good point of sale system will be able to tell you the number of transactions and the average value quite easily.
Excellent. We talk a little bit. You also mentioned the two other items were the cash flow position and the income statement. And for most of the businesses that we help provide plans for, I think that those may as well be those are also suitable items.
You have to do it. Small businesses die very quickly without cash. Even a profitable business dies without cash. And it's one of the things that separates successful business owners from so many others is the discipline to look at the income statement at least every month and the cash flow statement. We look at cash flow statements once a week.
Okay.
It just gives you enough warning and a really good indicator of the health of your business. Obviously, in a cash-based business, it's not quite as important as a business where you're offering credit. But those are the key indicators of any business, and it does take discipline to think about and to do those things.
Excellent. Very helpful. Again, this information is available on your website at nomore247.com within your blog. As well, you've documented applying this process to an ice cream shop, which I think is definitely of interest to a portion of our audience. And I wanted to take a minute here, and there's a couple other questions that I had before we sign off. First, I'd like to say is there anything up to this point that I missed or questions that you wish I might have asked about your process?
I think we've covered pretty much of that. I just wanted to briefly speak about a book that we were speaking about earlier.
Yes.
It's a very popular business book called The E-Myth or The E-Myth Revisited by a guy called Michael Gerber.
Yes,
absolutely. He sold 500,000 copies of this book over the last 20 years. And this book really sets out, and I think it would probably set out for the first time when he published it 20 years ago, the concept of systemizing a business. And certainly it was of quite a lot of influence when learning about this. And I think much of the work that's happened by other authors has been somewhat derivative from that original work. However, none of these books really go far enough into actually doing it. You're probably better off, even if you don't want to buy a program such as what we sell, is actually just sitting down and getting started, if that makes sense.
You talk a little bit about that, too, in your blog, using a wiki to, we'll have to probably describe what that is, to detail out the different processes as a place to collect them where employees can get to them online. And simply going through and detailing out these different elements of your business, everything from billing and stocking and customer interaction. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And I'm sorry, that was a point I did want to touch on.
About using a wiki?
And let's describe, first of all, what a wiki is to those people who don't know. I'll let you do that.
Well, a wiki is a fairly versatile document management system. It sits on the internet. Probably the most famous one is called Wikipedia.
Yes.
Which is just a huge encyclopedia. The advantage about using a wiki as opposed to using a Word document is that you can quite easily make up links, hypertext links, like you would have on a website, except it doesn't require a whole bunch of knowledge on how to produce a website. So what you can do is you can have a process detailed, and you can have a link to the document that's involved with that process. The process.
Okay.
Also, by putting it up on a website, it's quite easy to change it once and have everybody current with it.
Exactly, versus 5 or 10 manuals.
Yeah. You can also password protect certain areas. So if you've got information that's available to management, but perhaps not that you don't want to share with frontline workers, you can allow access to various levels, which is easier than controlling paper-based manuals. And if you're planning on having multiple locations, this is really the only way to go. Can you imagine how difficult it must have been in the old days for the big franchise operations or the large multi-location chains to send out hundreds of pounds worth of dead tree manuals every time they change something?
And exactly, and then have to update them, and then just even storing them, the inconvenience.
Yeah. A wiki is it's a simple tool to set up. Most web hosts have one or other as a free service. A couple of clicks and you can set it up and you can start documenting your processes and building up the systems.
You gave us the name of one on your website. Can you go ahead and do that again, please?
Yeah, I use one called PM Wiki. You can find all the details at PM Wiki. That's PMWIKI.org.
Okay.
It's available free of charge. It's well supported, and the nice thing is you can actually customize the look of it so that it matches up with your brand and your corporate image. It looks pretty smart and impresses the employees.
Fabulous, fabulous. Well, that's a great piece of advice as well, because I know how these can get out of date, and something that only sits on one person's computer can be tough to access. In the way of Word documents, etc. So that gives you a platform with which to keep your content manuals and your operations up to date and accessible.
We've gone even further. We've put training videos onto it.
Wow. Videos that you were taking of you with the slushy machine?
Yeah, me getting my trousers soaked with slushy machine will be on there in the next couple of days onto one of them. So when it comes time for somebody to train, they can go to their particular position, whether it be a cashier or an operations manager, whatever, and they can open up a page that has links to all the information that they need in a central place, including the documents that they're going to be using so they can print them up if they need to. It has access to the training manuals, descriptions of the processes that they're going to be using, standards to which they need to work. All of that's easily available from a number of different locations.
Outstanding. Outstanding. That's a great idea. I haven't used PM Wiki, but I'm going to go ahead and take a look at that. And I think we've covered just about every aspect of this. There's more information on your website, nomore247.com. And as well, for those listeners in the call, if this is a package that you can see helping you to streamline your business, definitely check out our website for a 50% off coupon, and that is digitalharvestresearch.com, and click on the resources tab and you'll see the option available there to go ahead and access this product at a 50% discount. And with that, I think that we're good to go here. I really appreciate your time, and certainly you're available as well on your website. You have an email link. Something else I'd recommend for people is your newsletter, your e-course, and that's free. But that's a fabulous way for people as well to get introduced to your process and this idea of systemizing the business as a way of helping people to increase their profits and maintain emotional sanity in the chaos of entrepreneurship and starting a new business.
Well, it's certainly been a pleasure speaking with you. It's this evening in my time zone and this afternoon in yours.
Absolutely, yeah. And we should say that I don't know if we've mentioned this call took place. You're in Scotland, right?
I'm in Northern Ireland. I'm a South African entrepreneur. I moved to Northern Ireland about 4 or 5 months ago to take a semi-retirement.
Wow. Okay.
And so we're across the Atlantic.
Well, again, thank you very much for your time today, And we look forward to you keeping in touch with us and reading more about how this applies to your new ice cream shop.
Thanks, Jason. Goodbye.
Have a good day. Bye now.